For a long time, we talked about how to describe this real estate cycle, something like a V-shaped recovery or a K-shaped one or a soft landing. But according to PIMCO CEO Francois Trauch, it is best described more as a limited run Netflix series. Season 1, he said, started in April 22 and ended with the cliffhanger of the last rate rise that pushed people to ask the question, should we give the keys back? Now, we're halfway through Season 2, he says, which started with the central banks indicating rate cuts were ahead, something that's yet to happen. Season 3, well, it's not clear, but it's likely to be dominated by a funding gap. I'm Miriam Hall, PERE's Americas editor, and this episode of Spotlight is coming to you from PERE's Europe conference, where Francois delivered the keynote address for day one. In this conversation with PEI's real estate editor-in-chief, Jonathan Brass, recorded live on stage, Francois is speaking about decarbonisation, central banks, and why learning to be a good investor is sometimes learning to do nothing.
I love that series analogy. And actually, when I was thinking about some of the things I was saying as well earlier, and project them onto what you're talking about with this analogy, I'm wondering, who's watching this series? I mean, the real estate sector, we're pretty good at talking our own story and we enjoy it and we can be quite positive naturally. And I've referenced that the outside world is perhaps a little less positive on the sector. Are they even watching the series? I mean, and has viewing numbers come down as we approach season 3, do you think?
It's less mainstream than 2008, okay? It's more specialized to our industry, okay? I think it depends on the segment. Those who do multifamilies, in the multifamily sector, I would think that the series is watched because we know we have a housing shortage. For office, you know, they don't care much, you know? I think it's not a problem of the general public.
And just sticking with the outside views, I'm obsessed with this right now. Hearing about how our asset class is considered by folks who are not in it. Do you think, and I sort of distilled a bit of a flavor in my comments, but do you think from where you're sitting, that sort of mainstream business circles and media in particular, perhaps, have been fair or exaggerating in their treatment or attitudes towards commercial real estate in the last year or so?
I think it's up to us, to make it interesting and relevant, okay? And I know some people are tempted to throw the towel on decarbonization, but we do have a societal responsibility to decarbonize as a built environment, of which commercial real estate is a big part, okay? So saying that, you know, I don't care anymore, then is you're going to make your asset class even less relevant. Two, I think you can also show that real estate asset class matters. We are creating jobs, we have tenants, we have interaction with day-to-day society. So I think real estate is actually a very relevant asset class in terms of how many people it can impact. So I think it's up to us, of course, to talk about returns. It's more difficult today because, to be quite frank, today you are better off investing in bonds and private credit than necessarily equity real estate, okay? So it's up to us to also show that beyond the numbers, you know, we can make it relevant from a societal point of view.
That's a very good point, actually. I mean, when you think about it, and if the returns are not there, if the market has been overtaken by the cost of finance, capital generally, actually getting that mainstream, as you said, the sort of mainstream focus has dwindled a little bit, but one very clear way of potentially getting it back is to be talking about the broader decarbonization effort, the position of the built environment in broader society. Of course, you were there yesterday, but I thought it was a very interesting day, and not least because we still have a myriad of perspectives on how to decarbonize, how to regulate, how to measure. But more also, perhaps interestingly, there were folks on stage who were perhaps disagreeing where the onus of responsibility lay. And I know you and I have spoken in the past about the way PIMCO looks at this. Green leasing, for instance, and the collection of data and tying these two factions together. Do you feel a level of concern that perhaps there is a debate brewing here where it should be so, from where you're sitting, it looks like it's obvious what should happen with data collection and the role tenants are playing?
So first of all, at PIMCO, we are adapting to what the investors are expecting from us, okay? So you can't do something which investors doesn't want to do. Mm. In our case, one of the main accounts is Allianz, and Allianz is sticking to the course of saying, we have a methodology, it's CREM, and we're sticking to CREM, you know? And when it comes to new assets, if they are not meeting the CREM pathway, we don't touch them, okay? So I think in these topics, you have to stay the course to have an impact. And While CRREM is not a perfect methodology because it doesn't deal with embodied carbon, at least it has a merit that you are reducing what you can control. Okay. Regarding data collection, it would be ironic to say we live in a world where data means everything. We collect data on everything, you know. And then on real estate, we would say, oh, it doesn't matter. Let's not collect data on our own buildings. It seems odd, especially where it's very inexpensive to collect data on your own buildings these days, okay? And so not spending the time to assess the true occupancy of your building, the true consumption of the building, the true usage of the building, while it's actually very easy to do, I think it would be a bit strange, in my view, to forego that.
For sure, but I mean, you might find yourself in a place with a standoff with a commercial tenant, for instance, that is not equipped to provide the data. And if at least depends on it, at a time in which, you know, office vacancy in particular is a difficult thing to, you know, maintain, let alone grow, what gives?
Sure, of course, we're not going to force upon a tenant to do certain things. But what we do is we measure how many people come in and out of the tenant space, and we compare this to the legal occupancy of the floor. And therefore, we can sort of do an approximation of how much the floor is actually used. And then we use this to engage a dialogue with the tenant, to tell the tenant, are you really using your space? And maybe we're anticipating that the tenant won't keep their lease at the end of the day. So regardless, I think we are learning something out of it. Hopefully we can convince the tenant that the tenant can learn something out of it as well.
I'm going to switch gears because I can see the clock ticking away and I want to get a few more topics addressed here, particularly some of the stuff that you referenced as well. We talked a lot about interest rates, central banks. We have the ECB here a little later on. I'm interested to hear your perspective on what you made of the more kind of recent warning bells coming from the ECB and the Bank of England towards commercial real estate. When you see noise from this direction about the perils of engagement in our sector, what are you feeling?
Well, listen, I think if we were the number one worry of the central banks, they would already have reduced the rates by now, okay? They haven't. So something tells me, you know, we are not center stage of people's interest these days. We like it to be, but that's not the case, okay? And one thing I learned also now that we're part of PIMCO is that there are many other things which matters more in the current investment environment. And we just have to learn to be patient and understand that in the current environment, you know, we just have to wait because there are other asset classes, other ways to invest, which are more attractive. And then eventually, maybe season three, our time will come. And it would be interesting to ask the central banker, indeed, you know, I know they sometimes do these articles about real estate, but I think if it was in their perception, some sort of systemic risks, they would have acted upon it, you know, through interest rates, because interest rates is what impacts real estate the most, to be quite frank, and they haven't done it.
To go back to your point on patience, if I'm sitting in the room and I'm a manager of an equity side strategy, and credit, I don't have the tools for that. I want to play, but I can't see where to place my capital. If I've got any. What do you tell those guys? Do they literally have to sit on their hands at the moment? Or is there something for them to do beyond, you know, putting out fires on the existing portfolio?
I think learning to be a good investor also is learning to do nothing from time to time. That doesn't mean they're not busy. There's a lot we can do to prepare for season three and the secular trends which are coming. There's a lot to be done on doing asset management work, which many of them have not been used to. There's a lot to be done. And I think if the bid-ask spread is narrowing, which we are seeing, I think sales will come back. And there's lots to be done in putting the same teams on the sales effort and understanding how to use the capital stack. Not just, you know, to do equity, but to look at more hybrid ways to invest, you know, preferred equity, forms of debt, I think is a very healthy way to think about real estate investment in a broad sense.
In my opening comments, I talked a bit about forbearance and the various dynamics that we have in the industry. And someone has just put in a question onto the iPad here about pretend and extend. It's something we've obviously gotten used to, we've seen. Could that still be a major theme come season four, it's being suggested here, thereby taking the wind from the tsunami. Well, what would you say to that? Surely there's an end to pretending and extending.
Yeah, I think we don't know how season two will end, you know, with the tsunami. And could there be a bit of extend and pretend? For sure. Meaning, imagine a bank, as the example I was giving you before, which says, you know what, I don't want to lend you at 60% LTV, but I'm going to go to 65. And the borrower is saying, you know what, I'm throwing in 5 or 10 million into it. It's a form of extend and pretend, you know, and then we'll speak again in 3 years' time. I just came back from the US and I looked at one of our large office portfolio and wanted to see how much has been the valuation decrease from peak to trough, okay, on the assets which we are managing for that investor, okay? And this was just for New York, but you could apply for the rest of the US. And in New York alone, I had from the best building minus 5% to the worst building minus 50%. So from -5 to -50 shows you the bifurcation happening currently in the office market. And the US, you know, they do everything always more extreme than we do in Europe. Huh? The problems are always magnified and then the volatility is somewhat magnified. But it shows you the enormous bifurcation happening in the market. So at minus 5% or minus 15 or minus 20, you can do extend and pretend. At minus 50, it's not, okay? So something will have to happen there. So yeah. The music will stop mechanically.
All right, look, I think we're timed out. I, for one, will definitely be tuning into the series all the way through. If we get to four, wonderful.
Thank you. That's PIMCO CEO Francois Trausch in conversation with Jonathan Brass, PEI's Real Estate Editor-in-Chief. There are more stories from the conference on our website. I'm Miriam Hall. Thanks for listening.